from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about how the Young Audiences Organization became Arts for Learning.
I'll don my beret and preview a celebration of Debussy at Butler University.
And I get my lederhosen on for the Athenaeum's German Fest. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The arts education organization Arts for Learning has recently changed its name from Young Audiences of Indiana. Travis DiNicola spoke with Arts for Learning President and CEO Joelle and Florio Rossabo about the change and their upcoming Yum Chocolate Fest.
Joelle, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Oh, always great to be here.
Lots of good stuff going on at Arts for Learning. I'm still getting used to saying that. Help me understand this name change, because for many, many years, the organization Young Audiences of Indiana has done some great work here, over 50 years. You're the president and CEO, and just recently you've gone through a name change of Arts for Learning. So help me understand how that all sort of came about.
Right. Well, it's certainly an interesting decision to make after 51 years. This is our 51st year now. And, of course, there are always the concerns, will people recognize us as Arts for Learning since we've been Young Audiences for so long? But there are a couple of reasons for the change. One big reason, I think, is that Arts for Learning, a name we use a lot with some of our programs, like Arts for Learning Literacy Lessons, it's a more active name. Mm-hmm. I think that for a very long time, people have been under the misconception that we bring performances to children and that's all that we do. And our work is so interactive and we work so much with teachers and bringing artists into the classroom to really develop programs where the child is at the center and they're very interactive. Some of them are residencies, some of them are workshops, and some of them are performances. But I think Young Audiences just sort of perpetuates this misconception that children sit quietly in chairs or on the gym floor mm-hmm. to watch a program when they're really much more interactive and experiential than that.
And certainly Young Audiences for many years did accurately describe some of the programs. If you look back at the history of Young Audiences across the country, not just here in Indiana, but it really did have its origins in programs such as classical music performances or theater performances.
Right.
And so Young Audiences did describe, you know, who you were serving. But as you say, I mean, and certainly over the past 10, if not more years than that, there's been a real big shift in the work that your organization does.
That's right. I think even though we do performances, they're much more child-centered, and the trend toward being less didactic and teaching children, informing children, and have children more in a more participatory kind of relationship is what we're doing now, and I think Arts for Learning really reflects that more.
It also reflects, if I may, sort of it sounds like the philosophy of a lot of the work that you do. It's not just bringing in a performance or having an artist do a workshop for art's sake, but really using the arts as a tool to enhance all other areas of learning, correct?
That's right. As a matter of fact, there is a framework that all Young Audiences Arts for Learning affiliates, whether they've changed their name or not, are using. It's kind of a scaffolding that we've put together. So content can change, and content mm-hmm. is really up to the artist and the teacher, but the framework includes experience. Every child experiences an art form. They get a chance to create a bit in that art form and get to understand it more, and then they connect it to other areas of the curriculum. So that's a standard framework that all of the affiliates use, but within that there's a lot of flexibility.
And it sounds like other affiliates are also dealing with this name change as well?
There are. Over the last several years, many of our affiliates around the country have merged with other arts and education organizations. And so there really is no standardization in, with names, and we feel that our brand will come and be stronger from the work we're doing with arts and education and not the name. So so our national office gave us the freedom to change our name.
Now, the Indiana chapter has always served the whole state, but one big change you've taken on is I believe you have a satellite office now.
That's right. We have a program director in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
That's
great.
Congratulations.
We're really excited about that.
Yeah.
We want to develop more of a critical and deeper relationship with the schools there, and felt that we really needed somebody of the community. And so we've hired Deb Levy in Fort Wayne, and she is now working with the schools and businesses in the area, and hopefully we'll be able to develop that presence.
And I'm assuming teachers are still finding you, even with the name change, right? I mean, because really it's the teachers who are pretty much driving the decision to have Arts for Learning programs in schools.
Right. You know, yes, I think they will find us. And we've been transitioning into this over several months, and we're still called Arts for Learning, the Indiana affiliate of young audiences. And we'll probably use that very long name for a while so that the transition won't be as difficult. And I think there's always a risk in changing name, but I think that after a while, people will just begin to say Arts for Learning. It's even hard for staff and board. I mean, we're still saying, yeah, Arts for Learning. So,
well, one thing that's, that has always been a part of young audiences or Arts for Learning, whatever you call it, is the Chocolate Fest, though that is also going through a pretty big change this year, completely different. Chocolate Fest has been a great fundraiser and friendraiser for your organization for many years. And this year, tell me about all the changes.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Well, there's still the great chocolate, but a completely different format. We felt that the weekday afternoon downtown was great for the downtown workforce, but left out a lot of other people that really wanted to come to Chocolate Fest.
Especially teachers.
Teachers, children, families, people that work outside of the downtown area. Even people that, that work downtown would always rush, get their dessert, and then run back to work.
Yeah.
But this is really a completely different feel. It's a festival atmosphere, so it'll go on from 12 to 4 on a Saturday, October 20th.
Okay.
And we're going to have lots of activity for children in the underground at the Harrison Center. So kids will have various workshops and performances.
So and the Harrison Center is the new home for Chocolate Fest.
It is, yes.
Yeah, so moving from the Arts Garden to the Harrison Center and moving to a Saturday, and so families and teachers and kids can be a part of it. This sounds great.
I think it'll be great. And that also expands our offerings. Besides all the wonderful chocolate, we're going to have beer and wine. Sun King, of course, is going to be involved. And
love Sun King.
Chef Joseph will be offering wine. We're going to have chocolate milk from Oberweiss. We're going, so it's really expanded in that way, too. And we'll be having food trucks outside.
Okay.
And although they won't be offering any chocolate desserts, you have to come in for that. If you want to feed your family before they hit the chocolate, then you can do that outside and then come right into the event.
So the format of the event's also a little bit different in that in the past, you would sell tickets and each ticket would get you one dessert. This time it's you actually pay for entry and then you get to sample? Is that...
That's right. It's a $15 entry fee, but there are 10 samples per entry fee. And then you can purchase from the vendors. So if you have a sample and you just can't resist that particular sample, you can buy the product from the vendor. So that's really, I think, kind of something very different for us.
Yeah.
And we're also going to have everybody who attends has an opportunity to go through the gallery at the Harrison Center, and some of the artists will have their studios open that day, too.
Oh, great.
So there will be a lot going on. So you can go up and down from the gymnasium where all of the vendors will be
Okay, and the Harrison's at 16th and Delaware, of course.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So filling the gymnasium, downstairs, upstairs, it sounds like really sort of taken over. And of course, with the food trucks outside, that'll be fun.
Oh, I think it'll be great. And I'm hoping that lots of people come with their children and families. But it's not just a children's event. We'll have something for everyone.
Well, you know, and one thing I remember about the early history of Chocolate Fest was part of the reason it was on a weekday was it was a day that was always picked as a teacher's in-service when that could be coordinated. But that certainly became more difficult to coordinate with the same teacher in-service day for all teachers at one time.
Right.
And so the event certainly shifted to more of a focus for a while on sort of people who work downtown, but now this is a great way to connect to teachers and to families as well. It sounds like just a really fun day. Who are some of the vendors?
Well, we have Abbott's Also Candies, Best Chocolate in Town, Cakes by Chris Indy, Chef Joseph will be serving wine. We'll have Chocolate for the Spirit and Endangered Species, Hoagland, Hubbard and Cravens will be offering hopefully a chocolatey, nuanced coffee. Indie Cakes, Just Pop In, Louise Sweets, Oakley's Bistro, Oberweiss, The Chef's Academy, Chocolade Chocolate Factory, and Zocal Art, and there may be even more.
Great. So, and you've also got a special deal, right, for teachers?
That's right. Because we work so closely with teachers, and it's been so long since they've been able to attend, if the teacher gets our catalog or wants a catalog, all they have to do is contact our office, and we'll send them one. There is a coupon in the catalog, and all they have to do is cut that out, and that gives them a $5 discount on adult individual tickets.
Excellent. And they can teachers can get the catalog if they go to your website?
Yes, if they go to www.yaindy.org, or if they just want to call our office, we'll make sure we get a catalog out to them.
And the catalog, of course, has all the programs and workshops that Arts for Learning offers.
Yes, absolutely. All the information about programming.
Joellen, real quickly, before we wrap this up, I know you've got another event, Run for the Arts, coming up fairly soon as well.
Right, and that's sort of a rolling event in that schools don't have to do the run at a specific time, although we do have a run in the fall and spring. This is a great way for schools to raise money to bring programming. Many times we receive grants that we're able to subsidize the programs for schools, but it doesn't cover all the costs.
Sure.
And if schools want more programming, this is a great way to be able to afford the programs and to get the parents more involved in the programming. And it doesn't always have to be a run. They can do a dance for the arts or
have fun.
Jog or trek for the arts, anything that they want to do, and it's really a great built-in fundraiser for schools.
So certainly another way to bring in the great programs from Arts for Learning, the professional artists, teaching artist programs, performances, workshops, classes and such into schools, working with kids, and kids of all ages again, right? I mean, it's early childhood through high school.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Joellen, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me here.
Travis DiNicola with Arts for Learning CEO and President Joellen Florio-Rossabo. The Chocolate Fest takes place at the Harrison Center on Saturday, October 20th from noon to 4. You can get more information about Chocolate Fest and the arts education programs Arts for Learning provides online at yaindy.org, yaindy.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Jordan College of the Arts School of Music will celebrate the sesquicentennial, that's 150, anniversary of Claude Debussy by holding a series of lectures and performances featuring Butler students, faculty, and renowned guest artists. Sharon Gamble invited Butler's longtime music history and musicology professor, Jim Briscoe, in to talk about how Debussy changed the musical landscape.
So I know you have a personal relationship to the composer in question. You've edited something like 7 manuscripts, critically edited them.
That's right.
But can you help us with an overview of what came before Claude Debussy and what he changed in music? Big question, short interview time, but what was going on in music when he was coming up, and what did he do that was revolutionary?
Thank you very much. That is a big question, but first let me say thank you again for having me on. Debussy was nourished by a number of sources, and that number is part of the reason for his kaleidoscopic outcome. He certainly understood the impression of Wagner, Wagner opera, Wagner music dramas. He likewise perceived the impression of the so-called French Renaissance, those who came to the fore after about 1870, Saint-Saëns, Fauré, Franck, and so on. He was quite interestingly involved in salon music, more than we would think.
Really?
Of course, we would trace Chopin as the peak of that, but other music for the salon is something that we don't so much understand anymore.
No.
But salon music certainly nurtured such things as the piano preludes, which we're going to hear on this Debussy celebration, the program, actually the first program on Saturday evening, the 29th. So our wonderful friend Eugenio Urrutia will play that, and I think it'll be a marvelous show that of Debussy's relation to that tradition. Now, it's sure that he didn't stop with the rather almost saccharine harmonies that the sentimental composers were using, but nonetheless, the idiom and the ambience of the salon was there. You have other influences that one could go far with. The Russian influence is often seen as key. He traveled in Russia and played in Madame von Meck's piano trio, she the protectress of Tchaikovsky.
Right, right.
So we've got the piano trio with Davis Brooks, Minju Choi of University of Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and Kurt Fowler of Indiana State. So that will be heard, too. But there are many elements of this festival. One can get the full program, I might say, by going to butler.edu/music. butler.edu/music, and you'll pick up the entire program. We are extremely excited about it. I think Debussy, to continue your question, flourished quite because of genius, and it's so extremely difficult to trace how he took these influences and transformed them in this remarkable way to a new style that quite simply drove the future, that drove the 20th century. My view, and that of others too, I haven't invented it, is that Debussy was the first of the modernists, the first of the modern composers who saw the, as he put it, the abyss of freedom and just drew back. I think that...
what an interesting way to view it.
Yes, he didn't jump entirely.
All rules are tossed out, yeah. So now I have infinite freedom, but that's scary.
I think that's it, freedom. I've just interviewed a number of composers living today, George Crumb, Alan Zwillick, and John Corigliano, Philip Glass, and so on. And their impression is that it's that opening of the door to all possibilities that has meant the most. That's darn hard to trace to what possibilities, you have to ask. Well, that's for each composer to answer. But I think that freedom is the essential gift to the 20th and now 21st century.
I want to understand a little bit more about salon music, because to me the connotation is intimate space, which I think most people, if you say Debussy, have an instant oral identification with piano music that draws you in, that may be a little quieter, not bombastic. Tell me more about the salon music aesthetic. who patronized these salons, how music was composed for the salons?
Yes. Well, I think that very, very many people attended salon concerts, including the very wealthy and educated, but people of the middle class, we would say. In this day, of course, we know that it was only proper, expected for people of any learning, of any status and hoped for status to learn music, to play the piano, to sing, perhaps to play the flute and so on. So the salon atmosphere was everywhere present in virtually all of Western society, including, of course, the United States, as well as Britain and France and the other. So the ambience of the salon was remarkably important. It gave Debussy, I think, or fed his sense of intimacy. One little detail. When he played a recital in a concert hall, he shut the lid. He always played with the lid shut. And I think it's because the intimate, quiet, almost muffled sound is something that he preferred. So the general sense of salon and of its quietness, intimacy, personhood was part of his idiom.
We so associate him with piano music, but not exclusively, of course. He was a great tone painter with orchestral texture. How did he learn about the orchestra and the capacities of instruments beyond the piano?
The French were, of course, extremely high on opera. And he wrote one remarkable opera, Pelléas et Mélisande, in 1902, heard. And I guess opera color is the root of Debussy's orchestral appreciation, from Berlioz through to Liszt and on to that period of Debussy after about 1890. We are delighted to have a fine orchestra concert on Sunday afternoon the 30th at 3, a wonderful lecture at 2, by the way, and Dr. Hertz from IU is giving that on Debussy and the new orchestra. But in any case, on the concert, we're going to hear the nocturnes. We're going to hear that painting series, if you will, based upon Whistler, the American painter active in France, Whistler as an imaginator of these things. Then we'll hear certainly The Afternoon of a Faun, which Pierre Boulez, the great French writer and aesthetician, says was the beginning of modern music, that work we'll hear. You can hear likewise, if you come, please. You may hear at this concert Iberia on the Spanish theme, which struck Debussy quite so strongly. So there are wonderful examples, if you will, representations of Debussy's many tastes, even on that orchestra concert, and a brilliant orchestrator, and the French love of color is certainly something that comes through.
An opportunity to hear his writing for voice as well.
Yes, we're going to have what I am sure of will be a fine vocal concert that will involve the quite, how shall I put this diplomatically, sensual Chanson de Bilitis, the songs of Bilitis based on Greek idioms and sensuality, after all. Debussy, the hedonist, the sense lover, that sensation appreciation. But we'll hear the Baudelaire songs along the way, quite beautiful Baudelaire. And likewise, of course, the fête galante, the courtly stance that Debussy took at times. And then to the rather classicizing facet of Debussy, as you turn this kaleidoscope, you get to the classical. And then the songs of Villon, a 14th century French poet, are going to be heard. Villon, actually a criminal poet, if you wish to say the straight of it. So it's a wonderful selection from virtually his earliest pieces, age 18, Bonsoir, Beautiful Evening, all the way through to the wonderful Sonata for Flute, Viola, and Harp, of 1917, his last major composition before he died the next year.
What a very short life.
Yes, rather short.
By our
standards. Mm-hmm. He lived to be 57, but that is short, I guess, in this day.
Now, I've read that he didn't so much care for being called an impressionist.
No. It was used, of course, in a pejorative, if not mocking, way when that first impressionist show was given in 1872, then these paintings, Monet, Manet, and so on, were punned as being slapdash, monkey paintings. But the fact is, of course, they're quite intentional, thank you, and mean to bring forth the imagination of the onlooker and not to dictate, not to prescribe a translation. That's Debussy's idea. Impressionism, symbolism, join hands in the idea of drawing forth the sensation and thought process of the onlooker or hearer. And that evocation, not provocation, is certainly what Debussy was about.
He was a quiet rebel.
Yes, he was. Quite subtle. Quite intimate, as we said, and subtle in his sense drawing forth a sense of the new constantly. Every step Debussy took was a renewal, was not some copy even of his own style. That's modernism, of course, the constantly renewed. And so I think that it was done quite simply at times and quietly, so that unlike, say, Stravinsky with his slaps in the face, or Schoenberg with his seemingly almost absurd chromaticism, no, that's not Debussy's way. Instead, it is the subtlety that strikes us most usually.
What is his legacy?
His legacy is that of continual inventiveness, of continual individuality, that the person hearing or the person making music must be forevermore an inventor, a reimaginer. That demand that we look constantly with a new frame of reference, with new glasses, if you will, at music. That music must be new, its performance and its creation must constantly be renewed. And I think that suits our century very well, because we know far too well how things revolve and rotate and transform in the 20th and 21st centuries. It's a harbinger, really, almost a warning of what we of this age must do with our minds. We must constantly be on the make for change. That's Debussy's legacy, I think, societally, but certainly artistically.
Sharon Gamble with Dr. Jim Briscoe of Butler University. Butler is producing Claude Debussy, Celebrating the Awakening of the Modern, a festival on September 29th and 30th and October 2nd and 9th. You can hear solo piano music, vocal music, chamber music, and orchestral music performed by Butler students, faculty, and distinguished guests, plus there'll be lectures. You can find out more at Butler's website, that's butler.edu, and then /music/Debussy-celebration.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Did you make a wish?
Upon a star?
No, on the birthday candles for the Art of the Matter, which just turned 13 this week. We're a teenager. We get to rebel and wear nail polish and eyeliner, and that's you.
13 years. Yeah, nice. 13 years of Art of the Matter. That's pretty fantastic.
It really is.
Wow.
And we're celebrating by moving to new days and times next week.
That's
more
right.
About that later. But right now, here's a reminder of some great things you can see and do in the arts in the near future.
On that calendar we call,
What do we do?
That's
almost
right.
Forgot the most important part, didn't I?
Well, if you're listening Friday night, then definitely put this on your calendar for tomorrow. If you're listening Saturday afternoon, there's still a little bit of time to get to the Indiana Author Fair, which is taking place all day Saturday, the 29th, at Central Library downtown from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's part of the 2012 Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award, and in fact, all the authors that are getting awards are going to be there, as well as a whole bunch of workshops throughout the day for authors, and there's going to be lectures and book signings and all types of great stuff. You can check out more information on the library's website, or just go down to the Central Library on Saturday between 10 and 4:30.
Don't try to go to the Midway, though. It's not that kind of fair.
Okay.
This Saturday...
No corn dogs at
no
the library.
No corn dogs or elephant ears. I'm so sorry, but something much healthier for you. Hey, this Saturday night at 8, the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra has its first concert of the season with violin sensation Caroline Goulding performing the Mendelssohn Concerto. Also on the program, Beethoven Symphony No. 4, a very cheerful work. So if you have been feeling a little lack in your classical music... diet.
Yes.
Do go hear the ISO musicians playing in front of Hilbert Circle Theater, but also check out the Indianapolis
right,
Chamber Orchestra.
They're at lunch every day.
They are indeed. This Saturday night. ICOmusic.org for more info on that.
ICO. Very good. Hey, something else going on Saturday throughout the day, and that is the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Home is having free admission all day. It's part of a National Smithsonian Magazine's National Museum Day Live, and all museums that participate in this have free admission. And so if you've never been to the Harrison Home, then Saturday is the day to do it, Saturday the 29th. They have tours offered on the hour and a half hour all day long up through 3:30. Go check it out at the Harrison Home.
If you like food and you've been paying attention to the slow food movement, here's something to put on your calendar. Slow Food Indy is presenting. Are you ready for this, Travis? You're going to want to pay attention to this.
You
and Elizabeth might want to
go. I heard food, so.
It's a goat roast dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether that was you being hungry or the goat.
Yeah, the goat.
I see.
It's a happy goat.
It's a three-course meal at Snail of Approval winner. That's the award Slow Food Indy is giving out, and it has an adorable logo, you can just imagine. Is at our bistro with Sun King beer pairings. Three-course meal. Goat roast dinner at our bistro. It's Tuesday, October 9th at 6:30. So if you're thinking, oh, there's just not enough to do during the week, Tuesday, October 9th, 6:30. Seating is limited, though.
Regina at our bistro actually has a new roaster that she debuted at the Fringe Fest, and that's just made for roasting things like goat.
Fantastic.
That sounds really
good. So there's probably going to be a little show and tell there.
Mm, that sounds really good.
I love it.
Hey, speaking of other food-related things, FoodCon 3 is coming up next weekend on the 5th. It's taking place from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Harrison Center for the Arts. That's over at 16th and Delaware. And you have all sorts of artists interpreting the concept of food as part of artwork. And then there's also lots of booths and information. And, of course, food. Participating artists include Marin Bell, whose two-part show, Urban Gardens, as I include both paintings and an interactive mural. Let's see, Carolyn Springer, Holly Childress, Christy Anderson, Erica Cunningham are all going to be showing off work in the courtyard. There'll be lots of other information about beekeeping and urban farming and cooperative groceries and much, much more.
Yum.
It should be a lot of fun. Again, at the Harrison Center next Friday night, October 5th from 5 to 9 p.m.
Well, not that we like food or anything, but I need to add on that there's one of those great First Friday food truck festivals coming up. Easy for me to say. I do radio, right? October 5th, starting at 5 o'clock, general admission, $5. Where is this? It's at the old National Center parking lot. This is where the food truck festivals have been happening, and it's
right.
A great opportunity to just wander from truck to truck and sample as many of the offerings as you can. Put cash in your pocket. Most of them do take plastic, but cash speeds things up. If you've been before, you know the lines are long. There's also some entertainment there. Delta Ray and Swear and Shake will be performing.
Cool.
Delta Ray and Swear and Shake.
Like
I know,
time.
It's very colorful, isn't it? Friday, 5 o'clock, October 5th, Old National Center parking lot food truck festival.
And yet there's more for Friday, October 5th. Yes, it's true, because it is IDOTA First Friday. And so, of course, all the galleries are open in Fountain Square and at the Arts Council space. One thing I want to mention is at Wuglacoo's Studio and Gallery Garage, which is located in the Circle City Industrial Complex on Brookside Avenue, just off of 10th and Mass Avenue. It is a great space. He is having a show of urbanscape photography by Paulina Osherov. And the show is called Paulina in the City, and she is an amazing fashion photographer. Absolutely astounding work, and so I'm really curious to see her urbanscape work, because I've never seen that. I've just seen her fashion work before. She's one of the founders of Pattern Magazine and part of the Fashion Collective. Should be a really, really cool night, and that's at Wuglacoo Studio and Garage. Should
Love
be fun.
That. Love that. Hey, on Sunday, October 7th at 2 o'clock, Great Spirit, which is billed as a multimedia work for Native American flute and pre-recorded media, is going to be performed at the Idlejorg Museum. It's performed by a cellist named James Pellerite, and also composed and co-created by James Aikman, composer. You can get more details at idlejorg.org.
Very good. Hey, you've seen the movie. Now it's time to see the play. Rocky Horror Show is being presented through October 7th by Footlight Musicals. Yeah, that's right. As in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but it's not a picture show because it's a stage musical. Definitely recommended for a mature audience. Yeah, if you know the story of Brad and Janet and Frankenfurter, then you know why. should be a really fun show. It's part of Footlight Musicals community theater season. And looking forward to seeing that. That should be definitely a good time.
Love
you get
that.
Always more information at Footlight, LITE.org.
Hey, if you're a visual artist or craftsperson and you're interested in exhibiting at the Indiana Art Fair, that's that great midwinter art fair at the Indiana State Museum. For those of us who spend a good deal of the summer going to outdoor art fairs, it's a nice little way to indulge ourselves indoors. But the State Museum is looking for artists living and working in Indiana. And the application deadline, if you want to know more, is Friday, October 5th. You can get information and applications at indianamuseum.org. So Indiana Art Fair coming up this winter, looking for applications for artists who'd like to be showcased. The application deadline is October 5th. More info at indianamuseum.org.
Cool. Hey, another musical that I want to go see is Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. It's at, Sharon, it's at your old stomping grounds at the Phoenix Theater, and it's running through October 21st. It is a musical about America's first rock star president. That would be, of course, Andrew Jackson. And I have heard people say it may be the best thing the Phoenix has ever done.
Well, I'll tell you, here is an interesting bit of praise for Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Somebody who saw it, who had absolutely no interest in history, kind of dozed off through her history classes in high school and college, could not get home to her computer fast enough to learn
about
more
Andrew
about
Jackson.
Andrew Jackson.
I've heard a couple other people say that, too.
I know. Who'd
this sounds
it?
Really great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've heard people talk about, oh, you know, Bat Boy and Urinetown, and those were such fun. But this one sounds like it's really the must-see musical to go see right now.
And it's election season, so a political topic is, appropriate.
There you go. That's a good one to see. One more thing you got, Sharon?
One more thing that I have. Monday, October 1st and Tuesday, October 2nd, auditions for Spotlight Theater 4, A Very Sedaris Christmas, which includes 2 one-act shows, The Santaland Diaries, and Season's Greetings to Our Friends and Family. If you're a public radio listener, you know David Sedaris's inimitable voice. You can find out more by Googling Spotlight Players and Auditions.
Very good. We'll be back next week with more on the calendar we call.
What do we do at new times?
New times. That's right. Thursday at 8.
And Saturday at 7, that's a.m.
7
a.m.
on Saturday.
Get a programmable
Friday
coffee
at
maker.
8 p.m. Thursday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 7 a.m., right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.
Set
Thanks.
Your alarm for us.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Athenaeum's fourth annual German Fest, including its now famous Wiener Dog races, takes place on October 13th from noon to 11 p.m. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Athenaeum Foundation's president, Cassie Stockamp, about the event and why she's going to be sitting on the building's roof.
Cassie, welcome back to Art of the Matter.
Hey, Travis.
Hey, so fourth annual German Fest coming up, and you're going to spend a week sitting on the roof of your building?
I'm
going
to live on the roof.
What's going on down there at the Athenaeum?
You know, we've decided that we recognize we are just a fun building in this community, and we want to just encourage people to join us in various different endeavors.
Well, let's start with Athenaeum, for those who still maybe not don't know what it is or where it is, of course, just off of Mass Avenue, New Jersey, Michigan, beautiful building, and you're the president of the foundation that supports it, that runs it.
Exactly. Built in 1894, old German building founded by the free thinkers who were very much, very progressive. And the building's still being used as it was originally intended.
And it really is a great community center.
Yeah, well, you know, we like to think so. Thank you. So that's what we're attempting to
do. Well, it houses many great organizations. Let me ask you real quick, because I know people are kind of like, what happened this summer with the Rathskeller? There was a lot of talk about all that and whether or not the beer garden was going to close down and how that all works with the Athenaeum.
Good question. So the Athenaeum, we own the entire building. Mm-hmm. And the Rathskeller, the foundation owns the name and the liquor license. And we have a very capable person that has a business that manages that restaurant piece for us.
Okay.
And we've got it all resolved.
Great. So it's all working out well.
It's all good. Yes.
So we can continue to have beer outside.
You can have beer outside and listen to music. Absolutely.
Well, that's a very good thing. And but the Athenaeum, I mean, as you mentioned, it's an old building,
It
takes a lot to maintain it. The infrastructure of it, and that's why, in part, the foundation that you run exists, right?
Exactly. So 20 years ago, and that's kind of the kind of segues right into what we were talking about.
Yeah.
The foundation was formed to help save the building because the group that did own it at the time, it's a difficult building to maintain because of the size. It's 94,000 square feet.
Jeez.
It costs close to $250,000 a year just to heat and cool it, let alone the other true maintenance and infrastructure needs.
Yeah.
So 20 years ago, the foundation was formed, and they too at that time were brainstorming. What can we do? Because when it rained inside the building. There were birds flying around at the time, and it was, you know, somewhat teetering on being considered to be demolished. And so a young man called David Wilkie had just had graduated from college and got convinced that he should live on the roof. Not for 6 days, but for 60 days, 6-0.
Okay.
So during that time, he raised public awareness. Lilly Endowment, thank you, Lilly Endowment, came forth with some serious dollars. So they were able to put a new slate roof on, which protected the shell, which was the advent then of saving the whole building. So 20 years later.
So David Wilkie and you know, 20 years ago, I had this idea of sitting on the roof for 60 days, draw some attention to it. And you're kind of 20 years later recreating this?
Well, in a little miniature, obviously.
In a miniature version.
Yeah, a tenth of it, obviously. But it was just, we just thought, what are we going to do to celebrate? How do you top that? And people kept coming back, and then the committee said, you need to do it again. And I jokingly said, yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Tell
me about the roof up there. I mean, you're going to have a tent. You're going to have, how's this going to work?
Because
you're going to have events up there.
So that's what I said. If we're going to do this, let's make sure we are doing it right. Travis, are going to be part of that.
Yeah.
So every morning I'm going to teach a yoga class. That's by donation. People want to come up
and do yoga on the roof.
Sunrise yoga on the roof. We're opening it up to lunch every day. So, again, we're limited. Obviously, we have some weight restrictions.
When you say open up to lunch, is this like bring your own brown bag up on the roof?
It's 20 bucks. We've got, if you come to our AthFound, athfound.org,
okay.
And under events, either you go to Roofsitter or German Fest, but Roofsitter will take you then to an Eventbrite link and list all the public events going on.
Roofsitter, okay.
Roofsitter, that's what we're calling us. But every lunch hour for, I believe it's 20 bucks, different Mass Ave restaurants are providing food, and we'll have live music up there. And, you know, just it's a unique opportunity, right? Bring your partner, your spouse, your girlfriend, boyfriend, and, you know, what a romantic thing.
I'm assuming you've got some, some barricades up there to keep...
Thank you. Yeah. Very good. Absolutely. Fall protection. We're working with a professional company. Fall protection. Yes. OSHA likes that term, and it's a very important term. Now, unfortunately, obviously, it is not wheelchair accessible.
Sure.
It is, you have to climb a ladder, so we do have some limitations. Things like, and we really don't want pointy heels on the roof. We prefer
good
you wear
know.
Pants. We don't want to look up any skirts, and, you know, so boys, don't wear your kilts.
Are you going to be sleeping up there?
I'm acclimating now. I'm hoping for an Indian summer.
Yeah, I'm guessing you've been checking out the advanced forecast, right? What do they say?
You know what? I haven't, because I am assuming we're going to have an Indian summer.
No snow, no rain, just...
You know, we'll have a couple of those days, but what the heck? You only go around once.
Well, this will be fun for you.
Yes. And then, so what we talk Monday, so we do evening events.
Let me just ask you this. What did your daughters say when you told them you were doing this?
Well, at 14 and 16, the eye rolls just get bigger. I'm still trying to convince them to come and spend the night with me.
Yeah? Okay. I don't know. Sounds like fun. So you're having lots of events.
Lots of events.
And obviously, you know, raising awareness for the Athenaeum, raising money for the Athenaeum Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Monday night is one of the few nights we'll be open to the public.
Okay.
Dan, and you are hosting Dan Wakefield as an author talk.
Author Dan Wakefield and I will be up there looking forward to that
yes,
very much.
Yes, it'll be fun. And the International Film Festival will show his movie. Or the movie
Going All the Way.
Going All the Way, yeah, which was filmed in the beer garden in various places around Indianapolis.
Right.
So I'm excited. It should be a fun night.
I am thrilled. I was actually an extra in that movie, and I've never seen the movie.
Oh, you're kidding.
So, yeah, this will be my first time.
Yay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So and then that leads up to Crazy German Fest.
Yes. So German Fest, the fourth annual, I forget the exact title, but greatest, craziest, whatever, German
Original
Fest.
And fabulous.
Original
German
and fabulous.
Fest, yes.
So the Wiener Dogs are back.
With bleachers, remember, we have to have bleachers.
You got bleachers.
So we've extended. We have a race starting at 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 o'clock. We have heats each hour.
Wow.
You have that many dogs. I mean,
All day Wiener dog races. Well, it's pretty popular. I mean, obviously, I mean, the first year, I don't think you really could have anticipated how popular the Wiener dog races would be.
We own a Wiener dog race. Thank you very much.
Yes, you do. Now, are there any, like, returning champions?
Absolutely. It's really kind of comical. They love it. And all the dogs get prizes. The various pet stores are, you know, donating, because it is becoming a rather fun thing. But
there's nothing
just,
like seeing a wiener dog race.
If you've seen it, you know it's fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have celebrity judges this year.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So Paul Petit, Patti Spittler,
nice.
Debbie Knox.
Oh, great.
I mean, we're, you know, just bringing them in, just having fun with it.
Now, if someone has a wiener dog, can they still register their dog?
Absolutely.
Even
again,
up to the day of? Or...
We're trying to shut it off. You can come the day of and register, but advanced registration we would recommend, again, at athfound.org under German Fest, and you can just do it all online. And you can buy your tickets, obviously, in advance for $5. So this is our fundraiser.
Now, not that you actually need anything more than a wiener dog race for an event, but... But there are other things
going
on.
There are a few other things. We start the day with a 5K Lederhosen race.
Okay.
So, and actually that day is going to be even kind of funny, because the fire truck's going to be there taking me down off the roof.
Oh, wow. You get to come down that day.
Tall, dark, and handsome. I'm looking for a nice looking fireman.
Will you be wearing Lederhosen yourself? They're not going to make you run a 5K after coming down.
I don't know. I'm not going to be running a 5K that day. No.
Okay.
So we start with a 5K Lederhosen race. And then we have a strongman competition, both for men and women.
That was really cool before.
Wasn't
I was amazed by that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, Jerry Kemna, Kemna Restoration, has taken that on every year. And it really has become pretty popular.
Huge guys lifting ridiculous amounts. So like 700 pounds
or
something?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it really is amazing. They sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So we have that going on. There's a huge kids area, which is just fun. We always get a lot of compliments about that. And then we have two stages that are full of, in the beer garden, we allow kids in that day, full of German, all the local German groups perform, either singing and dancing, the Philharmonic.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing this year is that we're going until 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
So the beer garden will turn back into an evening event with Dave and Ray playing, and then the Polka Motion will play all evening in the actual tent, the German Fest tent in the parking lot, and we're bringing in all the food trucks.
Good.
So, yeah.
Fun.
So it's just going to be a fun day.
Great. Any German cars this year? Didn't you guys do a German car
parade
before?
We did. You know what? We're so It's so tight.
There's so much else going on. Yeah.
We have so many different things. So, you know, we encourage them, but they have to park outside the lot.
Right.
So.
But definitely an event for families, whether
Absolutely.
You're German or not.
Absolutely. Oh, it's just a fun day, mm-hmm. you know.
Whether you have a wiener dog or not.
Yeah. Yes. Bring your wieners and come on down.
Oh, my.
Yeah. We won't go there.
So, of course, people can find out about all of the events, whether it's the roof sitting lunches or the event with Dan Wakefield or the German Fest at your website.
Absolutely.
Tell me that.
Athfound, A-T-H, found, F-O-U-N-D. org.
Oh, that's a new one. That's
yeah,
a
we
short one.
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to spell Athenaeum.
So if you still know how to spell Athenaeum, you can find it, right?
Yes,
but,
yes, yes.
But tell me the new website again.
athfound.org.
Very good. So what else is in the future, Cassie, at the Athenaeum?
Oh, golly. I just pulled a permit to close down the circle, so the Athenaeum will be involved with the largest yoga day. A sound mind and a sound body.
Well,
so
it all goes,
that's,
and that's part of what the whole philosophy is behind the
Athenaeum. Absolutely.
And, of course, you've got the YMCA there.
We do.
You also have a number of other organizations that are there, including Children's Theater.
Young Actors Theater,
YAT. Yeah.
India Baroque, the Rotary Club is there. Mm-hmm. The theater is just becoming more and more known as a children's theater. Mm-hmm. It's our youth theater. Many of the schools use it as their stage. It's great to see.
Well,
the
it's
kids
a gorgeous theater.
Through.
It's great to see it being
Thanks.
Used more
yeah.
frequently.
Yeah, we've got thousands and thousands of people coming through, so we're hopping.
Yeah. Very good. Looking for volunteers at all?
Oh, golly. Thank you. Yes, we are. We can use hundreds of volunteers, and you can go to the same athfound.org and sign up to be a volunteer. You get in for free then. Mm-hmm. So we encourage you, and you get a wonderful T-shirt with wiener dogs on it. So please, please come and sign up. Buy tickets in advance, and we'd love to see you on the roof and the day of German Fest.
Very good. Very good, Cassie. Always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Travis. And thanks for all your support.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And all you do for the community.
Athenaeum is such a great building, an important part of downtown and Mass Ave, and it's great to see it being well taken care of.
We call her Betty White. She's old and funny. Thanks, Travis.
Thanks, Cassie.
Travis DiNicola with the Athenaeum Foundation's president, Cassie Stockamp. To get more information about the German Fest on October 13th or anything else going on at the Athenaeum, visit athenaeumfoundation.org. A-T-H-E-N-A-E-U-M foundation.org. One more time, A-T-H-E-N-A-E-U-M foundation.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week at our new times, Thursdays at 8 p.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of this year's very playful Spirit and Place Festival.
I find out what's going on this year at the Broad Ripple Music Fest.
And I get to check out the upcoming Scottish Games. Plus, we'll have that calendar of events we call
What'll We do? So please listen next weekend. And again, it's our new time, Thursday at 8 p.m., Saturday at 7 a.m., when we'll have The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.